Hello, everyone. Welcome to Second Wind for Infinites, episode number 55. I'm being told this is the penultimate episode.
55?
Did I say 55? 85. Shut up. I'm not wrong. You're
this
wrong.
This is the worst Monday ever. It's the most Monday.
Blaine, it's Wednesday.
What? You almost had me there for a second.
Everyone in the cast and crew, we're all here to talk about this episode.
Everyone in the company.
We got Barbara, we got Ben, we got Blaine, we got Chris, we got Gus, we got John, we got Micah, we got Craig. Everyone's here.
Craig is the recording.
Do they know who Craig is?
Automation.
They don't know who
we
Craig
should introduce
is.
Him to Craig. We haven't talked. I don't know if we ever talked about
the audience
Craig.
Can't know who Craig is, Blaine. It has to be kept a secret. No
well,
one
he's
can know.
Oh, I okay. said it.
It is me, Craig. Now recording.
All the heavy lifting, all the stuff we can't be bothered to do. It's like, let Craig do it.
What's Craig's cut of the company?
Craig owns 51% of the company. He's the silent majority owner.
He actually owns -2%. He makes us money that we just get.
That's right. He's paying to be here. It's really weird. It's a bizarre setup. But we're here to talk all about episode 85, not 55, despite what Blaine said, of the Infinites. This is the next to last episode.
Yeah, Blaine.
Everything's been leading up to this, the finale, the final two episodes. And right off the bat, I have a question for everyone that I don't remember if I thought about it at the time, but I was definitely thinking about it in my re-listen.
Is this a Second Wind arrow?
I was going to say, it felt very
arrow-esque. No. It's about the episode itself. Like, how common, and has anyone ever used the word diadem in day-to-day life before this no. episode?
No.
Could have.
Is it a real word?
It is.
Oh.
And wow. I think it was weird to me. Now, Micah, you and I have never talked about this. I didn't blink an eye at it because in Spanish, diadema is a word that's used very frequently. So when I saw the word diadem in the module, it was just like nothing. Like I just kind of glossed over it. Like, of course, diadema. But
what does it mean?
In Spanish, a diadema would be like something you put in your hair, like a hair tie or like those things that like kind of comb your hair back and keep it like out of your face and stuff.
Sometimes when Chris goes to music festivals, he wears a bandana or a diadema in his hair. That's how you know it's party Chris. It's party,
that's party Chris.
Chris.
Yeah, you'll see the red bandana usually gets pulled out.
A diadem, according to Wikipedia, it's a type of crown, specifically an ornamental headband worn by monarchs and others as a badge of royalty. And then it dot, dot, dot. So I didn't read the rest.
Well, it's a lot more common in Spanish. It's not so hoity-toity in the Spanish language. Well, I was going to ask, so that begs the question, Micah, where did, you know, you come up with this? Is this a word you've heard before? Yeah. Did you?
No, I knew it before. Just because it's like a crown. Yeah. It's like, yeah, I've read enough fantasy and medieval stuff to know, like, I've heard the word diadem and I thought it would be perfect because Dia is the god of this world. And so why wouldn't it be called that kind of thing, you know? And because I named Dia, like, I knew that Dia is God in, you know, in Spanish. And so, like, and in Latin and like Latin based languages and that kind of thing. So I thought that would be kind of cool to have the diadem of diagems.
Well, it's interesting because like Dia is also day and like Dios would be like a god. So yeah, it's all very tied together.
Mm. Speaking of naming things as well, I listened to both 85 and 86 back to back. So I apologize if I'm referencing something in 86. The tornado, was that this
episode?
86, yeah.
Okay. We'll talk about it in 86, but I will bring it up then.
We'll get that in the next episode.
Barb, I was the same as you. Listened to them in succession. But when I got to the end of 85, I knew that I would have blurring. And so I was like, I'm going to make a mental bookmark of how does 86 start?
So 86 smart.
starts 86 starts with a tornado. And I was like, okay, I gotta cement that as a middle point in my head.
85 starts with you guys are dead.
Right. And we're with a Gum Gum talking to Dia in this.
We're which, not.
Well, no.
Oh,
I mean,
the audience,
the episode.
The royal we. Yeah.
The diadem which, we.
I actually do have a question about that. In this episode, we specifically bring up, or Gus specifically brings up, that me, Micah, and him had discussed what would happen if Chris just took a hard left turn and didn't want to like return to Faeza. And that is such a lifetime ago. I don't remember what our backup was like for our solution on like how we push Chris to really be like, look, man, if you don't take this, I don't know what we're going to do the rest of the episode.
Yeah, I think I remember being in the recording and Chris having that moment. And I think it was obviously Gus was the one improvising with you. And mm-hmm. I was like, man, this is a lot of pressure to put on someone in this moment. And I also remember thinking, because I, you know, was like mostly listening, but also like as you're recording, you're also taking notes of stuff. So it's like you would tune in and out kind of as it was going. And I was like, damn, this is a long conversation that Gum Gum is having with Daya. Oh, it's actually very important. Oh my gosh.
I mean, Gum Gum is clearly the leader of this party, right? I mean, that's been established from day one. Yeah, that was Bart.
No, I don't know about that. I don't know if you guys had to, I guess, pick one character that was the leader of the party, who would it have been?
Bart.
Probably Bart.
Really? I don't know.
Yeah. I think in the show at some point, multiple times, I think Kyborg made that clear that he assumed it was him. No, it's got to be Bart.
I would have said Mud.
Was there an arm wrestle to determine?
No, Mud just was a nanny. That's all Mud was. Mud is just I was helping Bart. Mud was helping. Mud was Bart's executive assistant.
It's like when you have like the mob boss and like the big guy who is just like, yeah. You can't talk to our boss that way. Yeah.
I'm assistant to the manager.
Yeah. On set, Mud was the AD.
Yeah.
Helping to keep things moving.
Considering
and going along,
my experience with AD, like, cause I come from not a traditional film background as much as some of the other people in our group. And whenever I experienced an AD for the first time, like went on a film set, I was like, oh, this is the vice principal at the school so that the principal can be liked and focus on bigger picture things. The vice principal has to punish everybody.
Mm. For those that don't know in the audience, what an AD is, someone want
to... Assistant director, I was about to say.
Yes, assistant director. They're the ones basically who are like telling the
Stay
crew
on schedule.
What
Let's
to
go.
Do and like having...
Next thing.
Whereas director is basically just focused on performance and saying like, all right, action, cut, etc.
I just realized I might be the AD of Stinky Dragon. I'm the one in the channel going, Gus, we got to move on. We got to get to the next scene.
You probably are, yeah.
Yeah, it's funny that you mentioned that, like talking about the leader of the party, because I feel like if you're asking Barbara, who's the leader of the Infinites, it's a different answer. But if you were to ask Bart, Bart would probably be like, oh, yeah, well, you know, I got the best voice. So.
I mean, if you give the award to the best looking one, then answer is obvious.
I think even at the end of this episode in the credits, it was this episode or the next one, Barbara, you do the credits for this episode and you talk about the people who do the voices for the characters in the show. And in it, you're doing it as Bart and you go, these wonderful voices, not as good as mine, of course, but.
One of my favorite moments was between Bart and Kyborg where you got lucky and we had this back and forth where we were whispering as if Gus wasn't there listening. Yeah. And we're like, you gotta use your blah, blah, blah.
But it's like, if I use it now, then I won't be able to use it on this.
No, you got 3 luck points. You're fine. It's good.
That's what's great about doing multiple campaigns where all of us are like playing different classes, races, but also pick up different feats and abilities. It's like, if someone happens to get one of those that someone's done before, we have a group of people who could be like a council of how to use it, especially now the barbarians for each campaign. We've had a barbarian. So now John has to be, of course, a barbarian next campaign, but...
And I've made it clear I'm not going to be a barbarian just because of that. I think we talked about that in an episode, more recent episode, or the Council of Barbarians.
Yeah, the Council of Barbarians. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's part of like the experience that comes with as you play D&D or role-playing games more and more. It's like the other party members you have and the other party members you encounter as you play. That's where you see how other classes are played that you haven't played before, the way that they do it, and you start like kind of putting that together. It's definitely part of the growth and the learning with
Gus, role playing games. A question that's a little off track, but it's still very D&D centric.
I'll allow it.
You talk about how you've played D&D for years, and I know that you like burnt one party because you were like stealing behind the scenes.
Not I played with them for years after that, by the way. We kept going. We got over it. They got over it, I should say.
Okay. But do you ever talk to any of your old party members and just like, do they ever talk about the fact that you're like literally a professional D&D player now? Mm. Was that ever get brought up?
I still talk quite a bit with Frank, who was our DM for Heroes and Halfwits, which is another Rooster Teeth D&D show we did before this. And I still talk to him quite a bit. Yeah. And, you know, we keep in touch about D&D stuff. He still plays a lot of D&D too. So we're always like each other's soundboards for that kind of stuff.
Does he listen to our show?
Frank as a voice. Yeah, Frank could be a great voice.
We should, yeah.
Hey, we should absolutely do that. Thanks for being Frank about that.
One thing I really appreciated in this episode, and I don't know if you guys did it intentionally because we knew it was like the finale.
Everything's intentional, Barbara. Absolutely. That's true.
But one of Bart's feats, I guess, that he got was he required like a dragon statue for 500 gold, more than 500 gold pieces. And I was like, oh, I can't do this unless like I had this thing. And then Gus was like, oh, check your bag. Just like there in it. Yeah. I just appreciate the generosity in that last moment.
When you know, Gum Gum was talking to his mother / a god of the realm, you know, talking about his friends, I feel it's like the least thing a deity can do is provide a material component in your bag after bringing you back to life.
Even though bringing us back to life is...
I was going to say, that's a pretty big feat.
Well, it's like, it's nothing. You know, what work is that to like a god of a realm? It's like not even a thought.
Well, you say that, but I think we woke up and we weren't even fully rested. Half of the episode was this.
Could have helped.
So true.
It also could have helped if she had made my role a little better on the healing.
Nah. It's like, well,
you got, hey, this is all nothing to God, guys.
Yeah. She doesn't want to coddle you. Yeah, yeah. She didn't want to coddle Gum Gum. She couldn't be a helicopter parent. You know, otherwise, Gum Gum would never go and do things on his own.
For perspective, the maximum... Like, I don't know what your spellcasting mod was, but it was 3d8. So you could have gotten 24 plus your mod. And I think we got like 11.
Yeah, 11.
Wow.
I also like, though, that you asking Barbara to check her inventory kind of primed everybody. Because I feel like everyone in this episode and the next are actually looking in their inventory to like use things. Like in this episode, Gum Gum uses a boon they got from arc 2 of the podcast. Well, that's just been sitting on.
Yeah. Well, it's that kind of, you know, mentality of like save it for the big boss.
This is the time.
That's true. You know?
And it was, I couldn't have thought of a better place to have used it because I really needed health, and that was the best healing item I had.
Yeah, and you had saved it for so long that it was a ridiculous amount of healing by the time
it got better with age. It's like a good wine.
I think it would have been funny if like it expired somehow.
This tastes like onion.
I always thought, like, so erroneously, again, this is my tangent, that wine, no matter what, gets better as it ages, but it's like not the case. Like, it can just go bad. Like, it has a peak.
Yeah.
And I was just assumed, like, why would you ever open a bottle? But that's me showing how much of an idiot I am.
I think it's like a whiskey, right? Whiskey just gets better and better with age.
I don't know.
I think with most things, that's true under very specific temperature and humidity conditions, which, you know, we don't have access
and
to.
And Guzzler would know.
There is a shelf life. Guzzler's had a whiskey or two.
I mostly just drink Diet Coke, and it's good whenever
ages perfectly in a year.
We discovered return to office probably around this time we were recording this original episode 85, so maybe a little before it. When we returned to office, we discovered that all of the Diet Coke had gone bad while everyone was
I forgot about that.
I think that was a painful discovery for some people.
How do we know? How do you know Diet Coke went bad?
It talks
to someone.
You.
Try one and it was hush.
People were drinking them, be like, this tastes terrible. And they looked at the date and it was expired for like a year or something.
Wow.
So don't save it forever. Use it while you got it. But
stay in my house very long. I drink it.
Steering back to the actual episode. Nah. I think Blaine, you originated one of my favorite jokes in this episode where you started referring to the intro pearl as intro pearl. Like it was a person.
It's me, intro pearl.
Hey.
It's also part of that is because I have a cat named Earl. So when I saw Pearl and then Earl. I was like, just thinking of my cat as this little Pearl monster. And then I was like, that's a stupid joke. I'll throw it out there.
It was good.
Earl's fat too. So Earl's kind of like a little, an orb.
How dare you? Earl's my thin, skinny, athletic one. Roy's the fat dump truck.
Roy's the dump truck. Roy's the absolute unit.
Yeah.
Blaine, you also called Gum Gum a Nepo baby, which is, I think, maybe my second favorite joke in this episode. It was like
that must have, like, I think that dates the episode because I think that was a thing.
That was a time and a place.
That was a time when everyone was coining that phrase and assigning it to celebrity children.
Yeah. I was just thinking about looking at the script that I gave you, Gus, for some of like the moments in the battle, like kind of the endings and stuff like that. And there's this moment in the episode when I was listening back to where you say, ka-chow. And I was like, I don't remember writing ka-chow. And I looked back, I did write like ka-thoom. And I guess you didn't like that as much. So ka-chow was the improv moment.
Gus.
I'm a big car fan.
Gus is doing a lot of heavy lifting this episode between the voices and the sound effects for like Entropa, but also every VO sound effect for the Anarchs. I would just laugh.
Oh, right. We are Anarchs.
Ow, which also need to, I don't think they don't run those commercials anymore.
No, I think our show in general is just full of things that age it, whether it's pop culture references or jokes, but it's a sign of the time.
I agree and disagree, Barbara. 100% we do things like that cements it in a time, but also we constantly are, I don't know, I think it was in the next episode, but I made a Joseph and the Maisie Technical to Dream Code reference, and that's not exactly a current event for me to recall a reference to. We make references to like new Gen Alpha slang words, and we make references to Rodgers and Hammerstein, you know, Broadway shows 50 years ago.
That one has cemented itself. It knows its place in pop culture. You know, that is done. Yeah. That is referenceable. Some of these other ones are kind of ephemeral and like on their way out. Then John, since you talked, I want to comment. Bones of the Earth is an incredibly strong spell. I forgot you cast it, but re-listening to it, I was like, oh man, this is a beast of a spell.
5d12 AOE spell. That's a pretty good spell.
Six different columns, I think.
I don't want to get into spoilers, but does Bones of the Earth come back up in Grotesque? Nah. I feel like there was the
campaign with Jimmy.
Infinite
mini
Inferms?
Campaign. Oh. Mini campaign. No. Yeah, the Inferms.
Oh, but no, I thought we wouldn't have had
it in Grotesque. No,
I thought there was an instance of big pillars shooting up, and I was like, is that the same
thing? No, you're talking about, there is a point where pillars come out of the ground. I don't want to say when, but you're correct, Blaine, but it wasn't Bones of the Earth.
Gotcha, okay. Bones of the Earth is just a cool way of saying it. Just like,
it's a heavy metal band is what it is.
Good callback, you know?
Yeah. Oh, okay.
No, boo.
Kick, how well, to so kick at this point, you guys are Discord.
Oh, I can do that right now. At this point, you guys are like level 11, level 12. I think that's what was the Nepo Baby joke, right? Was like Gum Gum's level 12. You were higher level than everyone.
I say we were 14.
Is it 16?
Yeah.
15 or something. It was pretty high.
I think it was 16 because Bones of the Earth, I think, is a level 8 spell, if I remember right.
Oh, I wanted to ask like Micah going into this combat encounter, like, you know, this is the big boss encounter, right? Like, how are you trying to balance this, or like what's the mechanics of the battle? Like, what were you thinking about going into this? And also the players, like, what were some questions listening back that you had? Like, cause I feel like there's stuff in here in the module that Gus references, but we never directly say like what the portals are or like how these different mechanics work.
Yeah. I mean, we kind of like, I wrote it. And then like, I think I remember in the episode when we recorded, left it a little bit open as far as what the players could do or wanted to do. Cause I mean, I know that Bart or Gum Gum tries to teleport in, doesn't get quite all the way in. And then Bart, I think, goes later to check out one of the archways and attacks it with a spell. And the mechanic was like, there's this anti-magic sphere around them, around Entropa. And if it gets hit or takes damage and it strikes Entropa and like his kind of, his hit points get like taken out kind of thing. And so like, there's like, it basically was kind of open-ended. Like if you attack something, something's going to happen, basically kind of the idea. I mean, does that sound accurate to you, Gus?
Yeah, that was pretty much it. It was a, it seemed like it was intentionally built as a very target rich environment. Yeah. So whatever, you know, like whatever they hit would do something, you know, kind of like just go and
yeah. Cause the challenge is like you're inside, either inside or outside this anti-magic sphere. And you have to roll this arcana check of some sort to actually do something. So there's that challenge already. So you don't need to add, you know, insult to injury on top of it. I feel like it is a high AC and lots of hit points though.
I'm reading up like just on the module again, that once again, I haven't read for literally years at this point, but some of these definitions in here too, I'm like, oh, I see why Gus just sometimes just stumbles over some of these words. Like this paragraph here on the monster goal for Entropa. Entropa has opened up three portals to different planes, Anarxia, the elemental plane, Shadowmane, and the ethereal plane, and is summoning injuries. I'm stumbling over my words now. Summoning energies from them to create his own blackened anti-diagem called the Entropearl, made of pure Contrarcana. I stumbled my way through that. I don't know how you did it, Gus.
And all of those words can be found in the dictionary.
Gus, did you have to, like, of all the, because I was asking a lot of questions at the beginning, that opening conversations, were there any that you had, that you like, I don't know, had to check with, or like, because there's a lot of lore, like how much did you research and like, did y'all talk back and forth about some of the lore before going into it?
We had talked a bit before, like, you know, Ben alluded to, and I said in this episode, we had a meeting, you know, before this to talk about not only, you know, what if you went in the other direction, but what questions were you likely to ask? And we had like talked about that. And it was also really helpful that, you know, of course, Ben and Mike are there. So the whole time you're talking, you know, we were messaging each other, trying to build stuff and figure out the correct answer or the best answer to give. So, you know, as much as I'd like to take credit for improving all that wonderful stuff off the top of my head, in reality, we had a meeting ahead of time to guess what questions Gum Gum would ask. And to and also we were messaging together, trying to come up with the best answers at the time. I think we created a separate document with questions we thought Gum Gum might ask, but I don't know if we have that anymore. I don't think it was in a module.
I think it was just like in a Slack channel. Like we were just messaging back and forth, like what are some possibilities?
Long lost Rooster Teeth.
I know
Slack
that
channel.
Prior because the previous episode ended with like kind of the reveal, right? The cliffhanger. So I remember asking, can I get that lore dump and reread it so I could think ahead of time. I stayed up the night before the recording and was like, I'm going to think of like, what would Gum say? And just wrote down a bunch of questions that I had. I don't know if I got to them all, but I got to plenty.
If I remember right, I think it was you asking for that that made us be like, oh, we need to have a meeting.
we need
to talk about this.
Gus is preparing. We need to counter prepare.
Had you understand the idea that it would have been like a Return of the Jedi situation where it's like a will he, won't he turn to the dark side kind of Luke Skywalker thing, like joining forces with his dad or any like have you entertained that? Did you prepare for that at all?
I think we talked about it, but I don't think it was something we thought was likely to happen. I think, you know, by this point, 85 episodes in, we know the character of Gum Gum pretty well.
But we don't know. Mug.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
Sith Lord.
Mug. Yeah, I feel like it's like one of those, what's it called in Loki with the timeline splits of just like all the different things that, or the directions that Chris could have gone and how that would have potentially affected the end of the campaign or like whatever happens next. I do wonder what the different possibilities you guys had kind of in the back pocket.
Yeah, Chris, that would have been fun.
I will say this, like looking at the module, and like I said, we had another document or two, or maybe it was in a Slack channel that we don't have access to anymore. Like reading through the module at that moment, all it says is, wait for Gum Gum's response. Like after reading the intro. This,
stressful.
And it's like, okay. And then like afterwards, it's like, you know, if he accepts, then you know, hands him the diadem and then it proceeds from there. But it's like, there's just like a big blank space that's basically like, we're going to improv and figure this part out.
Yeah, I would say it's an interesting kind of emotion or trying, because this podcast is so, I would say, comedy focused, and then doing anything that's, I think emotional or sentimental can be a, it can be a challenge, but,
I think that, to me, the best comedies have that like level of yeah, emotion and punch. Like, cause to me that makes it hit harder when you're so used to the comedy. Yeah.
Barb. Yeah. And I think the best comedy comes from tragedy.
Yeah.
In a lot of ways. So it's like, I love stuff sometimes. That has, you know, well, yeah, but a lot of like bitter, sweet stuff. And I don't know. I thought I think it's just weird on a low, cause we're all just sitting around each other in a room and I'm talking to Gus. It's like the music and everything and the voice acting, incredible voice acting by BK. But it's a different, it feels different sometimes in the room, you know, when it's just us.
Sure. My kind of like philosophy on a lot of that has always been that to let you, the players, bring the comedy and let Gus bring story/drama. And then when the drama happens, you guys kind of have that choice of, do I want to lean into that, really like this moment feel heartfelt, or do I want to bring the goof? And you see some of that stuff with Algerock at one point, right? You're like, oh, he's dying. He's like giving his dying breath. But then Kyber's like, oh, is he dying? Oh yeah, he's dying. Oh, that's really bad. That's really, he's like giving this like commentary track.
I was thinking about this actually, as I was listening to this episode, how these moments, when you listen back to them, also like, as always, shout out to Micah for the amazing sound design and music, and like how you have like throughout these next two episodes, like a lot of character moments matched with like the character song and the, what's it called? Like a
theme,
which I think is wonderful. But while we're recording the episodes, we don't have the music and the sound design and everything like that. So it's just us in a room with Gus improvising against us. And so it's like hard to really feel the impact of the emotion until the final product is all put together. And then like listening back to it, I'm like, oh my God, I'm like crying listening to this. And it's so emotional. But in the moment, I'm just like, I'm silly goofy. Like, what's up, guys? It's just,
have you ever seen the really YouTube cool. video that like them taking the music out of like scenes of movies, like the procession at the end of Star Wars New Hope, you know?
Oh, yeah.
It's just the lip smacks and like them walking down this corridor that's just vacant of sound.
Right.
It's just like, that's the kind of feeling it feels like sometimes recording in a vacuum. But yeah, you just kind of imagine it. And I had a lot of fun like creating some of the sound effects that like of Yol's spells and Entropa's abilities and like the portal showing, all those things. It's just really fun to like create magical sounds that like add to the soundscape.
Well, I think we should go ahead and wrap this episode up. We have one more episode to do, the in-finale, and we'll get to that straight away. But if you're listening to this, I want to say thank you. You are supporting us, however you're listening to this show. This is, you are helping to power the show, so thank you for doing that. And we really appreciate it.
Unless you're pirating, in which case, what the heck? Hey, what are you doing?
In which case, I hope you're happy. Craig's going to cry. All right.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.